Welcome to the Creative Way Down podcast with Danielle Strickland and Aaron White. Each episode is designed to continue conversations from the videos and help you dive deeper into the Beatitudes as an individual and as a group.
Okay, we've entered into the Creative Way Down posture number two, generosity. And we have been invited into the Beatitude, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Mm-hmm. And, you know, before we get started on the hunger and thirst, I wondered if it might be worth a couple words around righteousness.
Yeah. The way that I've been really thinking about righteousness, and sometimes people put the word justice in there, but I actually really like the word righteousness in there, because what it suggests to me is right relationship, but not just right relationship with God. Sometimes, I mean, that's obviously hugely part of it and foundational, but sometimes we really limit it to that. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's not the fullness of what righteousness is. If we're invited into the relations of Jesus, which is what I see happening in Scripture, then we're invited into his relationship with God, which is perfect. He's a beloved son, and that's where his authority comes from, and that's where his sense of self comes from. So it's the right relationship. There's peace there. But we're also invited into his relationships with all of the rest of creation, which includes other humans, which includes the created world, you know, which includes art, which includes just everything that's out there. And his relations with those things are also perfect and peaceful and right. Mm-hmm. And so we're invited into this, I like to call it an ordered way, mm-hmm. instead of a disordered way. Mm-hmm. So unrighteousness is kind of, we can see evidence of it in our own lives, we can see evidence of it all around. The fractures in the world, the violence, the hatred, chaos, darkness, all that stuff. We know what disorder looks like. And so when I look at the life of Jesus, I see a different way, a different order of being. Mm-hmm. The way that he loves people, especially the way that he loves people who seem to be cast out. He loves them. You know, and when he talks about the Father, he's like, I just do what I see the Father doing, and I love the Father. And then he talks about the Spirit, and he says, this is better. Like, you can't wait for you to meet the Spirit of God. And it's this other preferring, but, you know, at peace kind of relationship. So that's what I see us being invited into. That's what righteousness is.
Making wrong things right, making wrong relationships right.
Making broken things whole is another good way of putting righteousness.
And that's, I think, the words, of course, the root word righteous and justice in Hebrew and Greek are almost interchangeable. They're similar roots. And I think in my mind, I often think of righteousness as right relationship with God and justice as right relationship with others. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the whole, it's all one to God. This is the thing. And we're the ones that have a dichotomy of God is not, because he's made the whole thing whole.
Right.
Right. No, yeah, we're the ones who have broken it.
Let's not split justice off from righteousness. Right. You know, let's not say, well, righteousness is just how we are with God. And like, you know, righteousness, how could we be righteous and be
and
unjust? It doesn't make any sense.
All the prophets are saying that.
This doesn't work.
Beautiful, you know, righteousness and justice are the foundation of God's rule, mm-hmm. God's throne, his rule. So this is like a beautiful way of moving, and you say this in your teaching, is moving now outward, moving to the expanse.
Yeah.
Where we've done a lot of inward. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of moving us still inward, but kind of outward into the deeper places, even still of hunger and of thirst.
Well, and importantly, whether we're going in or out, we're meeting Jesus there. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes people get worried, oh, you're going in, or it's all this kind of inner Eastern meditation stuff. I'm like, no, actually, Jesus is meeting us there, the deep places of ourselves. And then we're going outer, and that can be, oh, we're just all about kind of activism or whatever. Like, no, the point is we're meeting Jesus there, mm-hmm. in his righteousness. This is all about his righteousness and justice that he's calling us into.
Yeah, and when you think about that, it's kind of beautiful too, because you can definitely see in Jesus, if as you study his life and you get invited more and more, which is Beatitudes inviting us into the way and the person of Christ, that he's hungry and thirsty for righteousness. When he prays, your kingdom come, you know, and teaches his disciples to pray, that's what he's wanting us to pray, like your kingdom come, your will be done on earth. He's hungry and thirsty for mm-hmm. the righteousness of God to be revealed, like for people to be liberated. I mean, this is why he's looking for folks that need wholeness and healing and freedom is because mm-hmm. he's hungry and thirsty for the righteousness to come.
Yeah, he longs for us. It's the reason that he came. And we've said it a lot, but for the joy set before him, he endured the cross. Like, what is the joy? Mm-hmm. Yes, it's blessing the Father. I mean, 100%. He's doing this because he loves the Father and he's aligning himself with his will. But I have to believe that part of that joy set before him is the liberation of his beautiful, beloved children.
Yes.
Like, that's a joy that he's willing to endure the cross, scorn the shame, you know, because he loves us that much.
Yeah.
So he longs for us to know his righteousness and his justice and yeah. to draw us into it.
I love that idea of hunger and thirst. When you were sharing the teaching, I was also thinking of Mother Teresa's big vision that kind of revolutionized her life. And the reason I was thinking about it was because, you know, she's on a train on her way to a retreat. She's a cloistered nun, so she's covenanted for her whole life to pray inside
mm-hmm.
and to a life of inward, which I think is the phase we were just talking about, intentionally stopping and going inside.
Mm-hmm.
But this hunger and thirst moving us outward, and it's on a train to a retreat. She's going to lead a spiritual retreat for nuns of this cloistered order, of course. And she has this vision of Jesus from the cross saying, "I thirst."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And her whole, I mean, she would sum up her whole ministry as trying to alleviate or enter into the thirst
yeah.
of Christ on the cross. And I mean, it's just so, words like, what?
Yeah.
Like, I thirst. But then when you were teaching about this, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. I was thinking about how even physically, like that vision of the thirst of God, the thirst of Christ from the cross led her out
yeah.
of the cloistered life
mm.
and into interaction engagement with the poor.
Yeah, yeah.
Blessed are those who hunger and thirst. So, and she would describe there was something about seeing, like being invited into the thirsting of Christ
mm.
that awakened hunger and thirst in her.
Well, it makes total sense, because the things that we normally hunger and thirst after, you know, it's fine that they're there. I mean, actual food, actual drink, and other experiences and other emotions and stuff, that it's good. But if our primary hunger and thirst is for those things, where that's where we're going to try and be filled, we know it's not going to actually work.
Mm-hmm.
Where Christ says, you know, I've got water that is never going to run dry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you thought that, you know, you were going to get a little bit of this water, but I got it. And she's like, oh, give me all the water. Give it all to me. Because this is what's good for us. This is what we were made for, is to drink deeply of Jesus forever.
Now, this is, you talk about these two kind of worldviews, or the ways that we can view ourselves and each other. And one is an orphan worldview,
mm-hmm.
and the other is a parented worldview.
Yeah.
This was so powerful. I think it's so powerful because it's probably the essential perspective shift that we all need.
Yeah.
And I wrote down a few notes while you were talking. The orphan worldview is scarcity. It's competitive. It's feeling unnamed
yeah.
or unknown.
Yeah.
Like not belonging
yeah.
to somebody, or not being claimed
yeah.
by somebody. So maybe uncovered even.
Yeah.
And it's a life full of struggle and survival.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think one of the reasons why it might have hit me really hard is because both my parents are orphaned
mm.
in physical ways, like in their histories. And I was thinking about their background, and even as they share their background, like my dad, you know, he was raised under another name, but like in a really abusive way.
Yeah.
And when he was 17 years old, he wanted to marry my mother to kind of escape life in some regards, and also he was in love. But his crazy mother threw him out and said, "You're not mine anyway," and threw his birth certificate at him. And he discovered that his name was Robert John Strickland.
Mm.
But if you actually look at his whole life till he was 17, he was Jackie Arthur.
Mm.
So every report card's Jackie Arthur, like every... And then he discovers at 17 that this is actually not who he is.
Yeah.
And one of the most powerful things is to listen to my dad preach on Mother's Day.
Mm.
Because he uses that passage in Isaiah that talks, it asks this crazy question about, like, can a mother forget the child that she has born?
Mm-hmm.
And it's this question, right? And we're all like, you hear the question, we're all like, no. Mm. But God is not naive. And he says, even though she may forget,
yeah,
I will never forget you. Yeah. I have carved your name
yeah.
on the palm of my hand.
Yeah.
And carved, permanently marked its tattoo. And to hear my dad sort of speak of that realization mm-hmm. that he's been named.
Yeah.
And named all along.
Right.
Like, not like, oh, you were orphaned and now I've taken you in. But right. like, you've been named from the beginning.
Yeah.
Even though your mother might forget you, I will never forget you.
Right. Right.
And how, you know, my mother is a similar story, but just like how it ended. All of us who feel, I think in some ways, I mean, many of the people that you work with and I've worked with my whole life have been really orphaned, mm-hmm. rejected, unwanted, abandoned, you know, abused. So this idea of scarcity, competitive, not named struggle, this is all sort of a reality.
Yeah.
And this is almost a badge of honor in some ways because it's how you survive.
Yeah, I made it. Yeah.
So switching to that named, parented, cared for, unconditionally loved, trained, nourished, disciplined
yeah.
in the right way. You
yeah.
know?
Well, and the need for communities that then order themselves according to this righteousness mm-hmm. is so important because our whole structure of society is really based upon this notion of competition mm-hmm. and scarcity, in fact.
Yes.
You know, like we need... you know, you have to, again, pull yourself up. You've got to make sure you sort things out, make sure you protect yourself, you know. And really the goal, as I've worked with lots of guys in addictions, the goal is to get them out into their own apartment, into their own kind of, you know,
independent, self-sufficient,
all that stuff. But they've actually gone through this whole process of addictions recovery in community and in a community that is relentlessly generous. And where there's like, there's no striving, it's not competitive, you know, and they, like I love it in a 12-step group, they give huge applause to the guy who's got one day clean.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh yeah, we're so much better, we got 8 months. No, it's like, we're going
to
support you,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And that seems...
And it is a welcome, and
yeah.
it is a belonging, and it is a community, yeah. and it is a family. Yeah.
And that's why sometimes I say that they're so blessed, and the rest of us are kind of stuck in these... assumptions of normality, of really an orphaned worldview, which is so disordered.
Mm-hmm.
And we desperately need that kind of welcome. And mm-hmm. and it's actually much harder for really hard-charging people to be able to accept that. Because they've had a measure of success according to this orphaned worldview.
Yeah.
You know, they did it themselves. They're self-made people. But that's not what we were made for. Yeah.
Right, or even, you know, like the fear of not being, like, of being orphaned in a sense. So even I was thinking of, like, you know, popular kids at school and,
right.
like, and peer pressure. So you can go at school or you can even go at work or wherever it is. And the reason we're so, like, driven by peer pressure is our desperate need to belong.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Our desperate need to be like named,
right.
to be a part of a group, to be like, you're with us. And I mean, you can go gang culture.
Right.
You know, what is thriving? Like, what is allowing gang culture to thrive? It's a distorted parented worldview. It's
yeah.
like,
yeah.
you will name you.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, here's a tattoo and
yeah.
here's a color and now you're with us. But it's this to death, right? It's
yeah.
just like naming to death. And I wonder, like, all those temptations for us to push down our real humanness to belong
mm-hmm.
is really this deep, deep, deep hunger and thirst for belonging
yeah.
that can only come from right relationship with God
right.
and each other and right relationship with each other.
Yeah, and we, I mean, there can be a real negative side to that desperation to belong, obviously, that turns into things like nationalism and tribalism and these kind of things that really are super unhelpful because they become idols. The New Testament uses this word synago, which is to gather. And there's a very negative version of that. Like the nations gather together against the Lord and against his anointed, or the powers and the authorities gather together against Jesus. They gather together against the apostles. But the same word is used of the early congregation of Christians,
mm-hmm.
is that they gather together. And their gathering was like, should be in fear, but they weren't,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they were together.
And they were like a weird gathering too, because they weren't any cultural normal.
Right.
You wouldn't get a slave and a free and a master and a...
That's bizarre.
...woman and a Gentile and a Jew in one room together.
Right.
For trying. And then right. the early church is this like group of gathered people who belong to God.
Yeah. And that was their identity. And that's, and we know this because in both Acts 2 and Acts 4, it says, and all the believers gathered together and they held everything in common, especially in Acts 4, because they said they sold their properties and gave to the poor because they recognized that nothing they owned belonged to themselves. Mm-hmm. Right? It's this really, like, if we did that today, and we kind of do, but if people like really did that today, they go, ooh, that's a cult. That's a cult, you know, because right. we idolize private property and competition and all that kind of stuff so much. Yeah. That they said, actually, it doesn't belong to us at all, because we've been called by God, by His Spirit, and He has named us.
Right.
It's not just even that we're naming ourselves. The Father has named us.
And in so doing, there is a filling, which I think is what's cool about it. So it's a, you call it a reorientating our desires.
Yeah.
Reorientating our desires. So, and I was thinking a lot about this even personally, how sometimes you hunger and thirst for escape, or you want to unwind, or you want, even like some people will say, I'm taking a Sabbath, and spend the Sabbath like watching a TV show, or, you know, like just whatever fills them, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. and, but except that it doesn't fill them.
Right.
Like, because what fills you is a hunger and thirst for righteousness.
Right.
So like, and I discovered this in my own life where I'd be like, I'm just going to zone out because I really just want to shut off.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, all my zoning out didn't fill me; it emptied me.
Yeah.
So it not only left me more; it left me more empty than I started.
Right.
Which again is addiction or any kind of mm-hmm. numbing exercise. Instead of allowing, what is it I'm really hungry for?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what am I really needing? And every single time when I really trace my desire to, like, what is it that I need? I need right relationship.
Right.
I need, like, right with God. I need infilling. I need expanse. I need, you know, things to be made right in me.
Yeah.
And that if I can attune to that, so, like, instead of watching my favorite Netflix series, you know, going for a walk
mm-hmm.
and asking God to just, like, just breathing and asking God to kind of do a work in me,
mm-hmm.
then I feel filled.
Yeah.
And it's weird because, like, my mind will go, like, you don't need to walk, just sit on the couch and, like, you know what I mean? Like, whatever it is. I'm not, it might be Netflix. I don't want to be like prescriptive, but in my own life, mm-hmm. I've realized that a lot of the things that I turn to out of a hunger and thirst are not for righteousness. They leave me more empty than ever before.
Right. Yeah.
And I think, you know, when we think of people driven by desire, we're in a culture that's like excessive in hunger and thirst. They're just not hungering and thirsting for righteousness, or at least they don't know that's what their hunger and thirst is for.
Yeah, well, and I think we live in a culture too that kind of says whatever desire we have, we should meet because it's good,
mm-hmm.
and in the ways that we know how to meet them. And to that I respond, actually, if we do have hunger and thirst, if we do have desire, it does indicate something that should be filled,
mm-hmm.
but not just in any way that we can figure out.
Right.
Right? Like this is, this again goes back to the first beatitude, poverty of spirit. There's recognition that I can't meet all my needs,
mm-hmm.
but there's one who can. And my attempt to meet all my needs actually leads me into greater chaos and emptiness than if I were to actually yield and say, God can meet my needs.
Yes.
So this hungering and thirsting is just, it's not saying that desire is bad.
No.
Sometimes I think we can get to that. I mean, there's other faith systems that do that, but also in Christianity, we can start to say desire is bad. It isn't bad. Desire, there's no way that it's bad, but it should be directed towards its proper end. And if it's not...
Right, which is identifying its proper desire.
Right.
Like all desire, if you trace it to its origin, is for righteousness. It's for connection. It's for intimacy. It's to be known. It's to be loved. It's to belong, right?
Which is not to say,
which
like...
Is it G.K. Chesterton that said, every man knocking at a brothel door is looking for God?
Right, yeah. So that's not to say, like, okay, if I'm hungry, then I shouldn't go get a pizza. I should just pray. Like, no, obviously there's earthly desires that we meet. But if I start to then think, oh, I have a feeling of emptiness, I should get a pizza, right? I mean, that's when I get in trouble with eating. It, and I think a lot of people have this experience. It's usually not because I'm just hungry. It's because I'm bored, or I'm sad, or I'm scared, or I'm lonely.
Right.
And I have learned that food somehow fills that just for a little bit, you know, and it does, like it literally does, because it feels good. Mm-hmm. Or you can.
But
do
then
that.
It feels bad.
Then it feels bad. But or you can do it with exercise. Some people say, well, then replace it with a different attachment. But then exercise becomes that thing that we're addicted to, and it's maybe worse. Because it feels better, and it's sort of approved,
looks better,
and it's all that. So it's saying there are proper desires and proper ends to those desires, but ultimately we can only be filled in right relationship with Jesus Christ, and through Him, right relationship with creation, our own bodies, ourself, and others.
How do you think, in the end it comes down to this, again, being either orphaned in scarcity, competitive, unnamed struggle, or parented, which is enough community, named, and rest.
Mm-hmm.
So like, someone's got you, you
right.
know, you belong to a people. And I remember, like, I think this might be the thing for me, even personally, to go out of, to recognize when I'm in orphaned worldview mode.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to figure this out, and I'm surviving on my own, to no, God's got this.
Yeah.
And He's my Father, and I'm not a beggar, I'm a child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, and just reposturing my life according to that beloved. And I remember years ago going to visit Jackie Pullinger in Hong Kong, who, like, you know, spent her whole life among addicts in Hong Kong, and saying, like, what are you doing? Because I would hear of these people coming off of drugs and belonging to community, and these churches starting. And I was just like, what's happening? Because we are not seeing that happen. And I remember her saying, well, in a word, what we do here is we reparent people.
Mm.
And there is this radical, like, it made total sense to her. But, you know, one of the things that they do is the person that's coming in, the drug addict that wants to get clean, comes in and is shadowed by somebody for 2 whole weeks, you know, stays in their pajamas, sleeps all day.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, we're trying our best to recreate a womb where this baby is wanted.
Yeah.
And it was fun, you know, after 40 plus years of working with the poor in Hong Kong and drug addicts and stuff, she said, I have not encountered one drug addict who doesn't have an orphaned worldview, like reality.
Yeah.
Rejected, unwanted, abandoned, discarded.
Yeah.
And that the only way to heal that is by parenting, is by changing the worldview.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that in terms of us needing each other, like our hunger and thirst for righteousness to enter into into Jesus' hunger and thirst for righteousness is met too by parenting.
Yeah.
By like being the thing we know is the game changer for people.
Yeah. Well, I actually think that the gospel could probably be summed up in the one verse where He sets the lonely in families, or He sets the orphan in families.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in every possible way, you know, I feel unfathered. Well, the Father is your Father.
Right.
But that's then how we are called to live with one another,
right,
is not to further orphan people,
right,
but to further go, well, if the Father is my Father,
right,
and if I have access to His storehouse, then abundance is the reality, not scarcity.
Right.
Right? And so then I can be generous without fear,
yes,
because I'm not drawing from my own resources.
Right.
I've thought about that a lot as I've prayed and worked in the Downtown East Side, that in my own resources, and I'm not terribly compassionate. Like, I don't have a lot of that energy personally. But I could expend all of my compassion easily in a block.
Mm-hmm.
It's not difficult.
Right.
But if I am drawing from the Father's resources, that never ends. You know, so if I'm just withdrawing from my own bank account, that's bad news. But if I'm withdrawing from the Father's bank account, it's abundant.
Yes.
And so we need to learn to receive this abundance. You know, so that we can help give that to others. We can live in that way.
And to keep posturing ourselves, because I think for me, it's also a reposturing. And you talk, the discipline this week is almsgiving.
Mm-hmm.
So it's looking for ways to give,
yeah,
to practice our own muscle of generosity. It's nothing to do with anybody else for now. It's just literally to be people who choose to give.
That's right.
And out of a generous spirit. And I was thinking about, you know, the opposite of generosity, the opposite of giving is scarcity, is mm-hmm. there's not enough. Yeah. And that is, trace that back to an orphan
right.
worldview. So even when you feel like the stinginess in you, which if you come from, you know, a background of cheap, or even a background of poverty sometimes, or even a background of just like really religiosity where it's not okay to be extravagant or wasteful, then this thing's in you that grasps, you know, that holds yeah. back, that's like, that's not right, even if it's for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you're incapable of being generous. And if you trace that back, that that cheapness, you know, yeah. stinginess of spirit, even towards yourself. So I often, even in my life, like I'll notice it even in my words. I mean, I think whenever we think of generosity, we think of money, but it's spiritual practice.
Yeah.
It's not just about money. It might be money, but like I'll find it in my words even. Like if I pay attention to the words I'm using to talk to myself, they're often stingy.
Mm.
They're often judgmental. Like they're often based in sort of a real cheap, you know, and I realize, oh, I'm even being stingy to myself
right.
with my words, right? Which if I trace it back, it's an orphaned worldview.
Yeah.
And I have to then learn how to receive the generous words of my father.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
actually, you're doing your best.
Yeah.
Like, I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
Like, you did great. Like, you've tried so hard. Like, I see this beautiful work that you did. Thank you. You know, like, and just, mm-hmm. and then as I receive that, then the scarcity begins to dissipate and I move into a generous place where then I'm able to be generous with the people around me.
Yeah.
I see you. You're yeah. trying hard. You're doing well. You know, I'm going to assume the best of you instead of the worst of you. So like, I feel like even the almsgiving, like, yes, give, just, and money is such a source of our heart, you know, our heart in our culture particularly, because it's such a high value, but even time,
yeah.
even words, even attitudes, like, alms given, all of them.
Yeah.
Like, look for places to affirm where you see goodness in people
mm-hmm.
today
mm-hmm.
as a practice of your generosity.
Yeah.
And when you can't, when you're restricted, when you're stingy in even what you say to people or what you notice about people, trace it back to your own inability to receive a parented worldview.
Right.
A beloved from your father.
Yeah, that you think you're alone, that you're isolated. Yeah. yeah.
That you're surviving, that you have to dig your way through this, that you have yeah. to make it somehow on your own.
Yeah.
Right?
I heard just a beautiful story of what this kind of looks like. And it's very extreme, but we can extrapolate to our own life. But I was speaking with a man who was a refugee from Honduras, and he was coming up through the southern border of Mexico, and this place called Chiapas, which I'm going to be blessed to go to later on this year. And he said that he was on the train known as La Bestia, the Beast, because so many people die on this train or under this train as they're trying to make it up. And you have to kind of stay in this cart. And he said, we got to this little town, and we didn't even really know where we were. And we were hungry, like you couldn't really get out and there wasn't any food. And all of a sudden, while they're just rest stopped in this place in southern Mexico, bread starts flying in over the cart, down into the cart. And it's like manna from heaven. But I was with, another man was there and he said, oh, I've seen what happens there. I was on the outside of this. And it's all these women from the village. They don't have a lot, but they know there's men and women and children inside these carts. And they just come with what they have. They'll never know who these people are.
Mm-hmm.
They never get to see them.
Wow.
They just know there's people in there, or strongly believe. I guess you couldn't even really, but you're not sure.
Yeah.
But on the off chance that there's a hungry person in that cart, they've made bread and they'll throw it over into the cart
wow.
so that the people just have this miracle,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so that is in a place where you'd say there's a lot of scarcity there.
Mm-hmm.
Their worldview is no, there's lots of abundance.
Mm-hmm.
The Lord has blessed us, so we share with those who don't have right now. Because
right.
wouldn't we want that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, haven't we been given? So wouldn't we want?
And it's a fullness on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's the beauty of the invitation from Jesus is, blessed are you who hunger and thirst for righteousness. So the people in the train are hungering and thirsting
mm-hmm.
for bread. And the people on the, you know, the spectators in the town are longing for those people
yeah.
to be in righteousness,
yeah.
to be made right, things to be made right. And they're participating in the hunger and the thirst themselves.
Yeah.
And everybody's filled.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Like the people in the train are filled and the people launching the bread are filled.
Yeah.
And that's the reciprocal nature of generosity
mm-hmm.
is that we are all filled in the hungering and thirsting for righteousness.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So practice that, posture yourself in that way. Almsgiving, yes, give, and then give some more, just to practice living out of a parented worldview, out of a beloved child of God, to fight off spirits of scarcity and thoughts even that you don't belong and you're not enough. And let the generosity of God release you to be who you really are.
Thanks for listening. We're hoping this helps you live a blessed life as you live the creative way down. For more resources, visit infinitumlife.com.